Yes, another massive name. Can't believe we've got him. Ex-Rangers manager Mark Warburton. Thanks very much for coming.
Pleasure. Up. Nice to see you.
I still need to say to you that I've still no forgave you. You broke my heart out of Hampden that day, Petrified Cup final. My son was crying. Cheers.
We had too much, didn't we? We had too much on the day for you. But the builder
played some proper football that day, mate.
We played well that day. A couple of great goals as well. Was it Tav's goal as well? It was good football. It was a good stage, and Rangers sold the stadium out, so the arena was set for the Rangers players, so it was tough for you guys, but I thought we were good in that day.
You earned your crust that day because your tactics were spot on. I think you put two men on me to stop me from playing with it.
I thought one would be enough, in truth, so I just played safe. One would have done the job.
Right, must say as well, looking tremendous.
Thank you very much.
Looking the part. London gentleman, innit?
I'll give the 50 quid after the interview, but life is good. Life is good in London, so I've always kept my base there. Mm-hmm. Living in Glasgow, Nottingham, wherever I've been, I've always kept my base, because once you sell your house in London, you can't buy it back again.
You can't.
So you just keep your base and the family stay there, and I'll go about my business.
London's a place, isn't it? It's where guys like me should be living, isn't it?
Nah, you deserve to be in London, yeah. Back street somewhere.
Right, we're going to go on to the managing career, but I just want to touch on the playing career a wee bit. During the playing career, was there any managers that stuck out that made you want to be a manager?
I've got to be really careful how I say this. The manager maybe didn't want to manage was Jock Wallace.
Really, don't?
And I say that in the right way, because obviously he's a legend at Rangers and I walked in the office with his pictures everywhere. But Jock came in, I was a young apprentice at Leicester, and he was a different type. He was, to say he was old school, he was way beyond old school. A hard man, and just did things differently. As a boy coming from down, I had no idea. I'd never experienced it before. But he was brutal in terms of how he dealt with the players, and I think he wanted you to respond by, you know, you're going to give me that, I'll give you it back. But when you haven't been used to that, that's like a, wow, where did that come from? Mm-hmm. So I found him, and another guy from London went with me as well as being an apprentice. I saw him for the first time for 30 years before Christmas, and he said exactly the same thing. Jock put him off football completely. And I'm not saying director to Jock, because obviously he's a hugely successful manager and what he achieved in world football, but for me, it killed my passion for the game at the time.
So have you been the complete opposite to that?
I came away, it sounds really profound for a 17, 18-year-old young professional, but I said I will never treat people like that. Mm-hmm. In my business side, in the city, in football, how I am now, I will never, ever treat people of that manner. But it worked for Jock, but it wouldn't be for me.
Uh-huh. Is there anyone then that did inspire you to go on and do the management?
Frank McClintock.
Right?
Frank,
what, the Arsenal legend?
Yeah, Frank's son Neil. Got four boys, but Frank's son Neil was my best mate at school. So my parents would pick Neil up and we'd go to school football, and Frank took me up to Leicester and signed me up there, and then Frank was dismissed shortly thereafter. But just Frank's passion for the game. He was the same background as Jock. You know, if I went to see him play in that season, at QPR, if you remember, they ran Liverpool close to the Premier League title, just missed out by a point. But that team of Givens and Masson and Bowles and Parks and Clement and et cetera. So Frank was in that team. And the passion, I went to see Frank train with QPR. Dave Sexton was the manager. So one of the world's greatest, you know, outstanding coach. So for me, seeing Frank, learning from Dave Sexton, that was what really lit the passion for me.
So is that where you get your style of play from, Dave Sexton?
No, I loved it. I loved watching that. And through that, very lucky to see Don Howe work occasionally, and the great Dick Bate, who's recently passed away, unfortunately.
I've had a session with Dick Bate.
Dick was the best coach educator in the world, bar none. But to get access to that level of people as a young man was really, you know, really fortunate and beneficial. But you shape your beliefs in football, and that's for me where my passion for the game has come from.
Frank's a Scotsman, isn't he?
Thank you, yeah.
Whereabouts, do you know?
He's a Celtic man, I think.
Is he a Celtic man?
So I invited him to Rangers.
How did he take that when you took
him? I invited him into Rangers to a game, and he came in the office. You could see him come to the Lions Den, so I made sure he was there with a blue shirt and all the flower scarves, but top man, Frank.
Yeah. Brilliant. I wanted to ask, why did you not go straight into coaching after playing? Why did you decide to get a proper job?
Nah, because I literally, you come out, I was playing at the time, you were 45 quid a week as a pro, young pro, and getting paid 50 quid a week playing, you know, at the time, conference football. So I was doing that, and my mum saw an advert for competitive individual good with numbers. That was the advert in the paper. Didn't know what it was, so I went along and took it. It was a bank, and then you find yourself in a trading market. And it sounds basic, Simon, but equally as competitive as football. Mm-hmm. Mad environment, huge amounts of money flowing through, responsibility given to young guys, and it was a male-dominated world at the time. It's changing now, thankfully, but it was a male-dominated world. Very similar to here. To a football dressing room, you know, teams of 10, 12, 13 guys, communication, teamwork, all that type of things that you expect in the dressing room. That was the dealing room, mm-hmm. with massive responsibility.
City, that's what they say, work at the City, innit?
Yeah, but they say that, but the money, people go, oh, they earn money. Yeah, no, if you didn't earn money, you lost your job. Mm-hmm. Same as a player, if you don't play well, you don't get a contract. You do well, you get a big bonus. If you're earning, you know, someone say, oh, the City bonuses, you see all the papers slag off City traders and their bonuses. If you're getting paid $1 million bonus, that means you've made $10 million for the company. So if I'm your boss and I give you $1 million bonus, I'm $9 million better off. You take that, anyone in this world will take that all day long. Mm-hmm. So you earn your money. Don't think for 1 second they give it away free. They take their pound of flesh. You're in at 6 a.m, you're leaving at 6, get home at 6, 7 p.m, phone calls through the evening from Tokyo and Asia and New York and wherever else, and it's a tough one.
Uh-huh. But you get that suit off your first million check.
This is the giveaway, this money.
But did you enjoy that buzzing?
Loved it. And you say, why didn't you go back in the football? I was playing. I went to work in North Carolina for a while, went to work in Chicago for a while, travelled to Tokyo, Hong Kong, Singapore, etc., and worked. But all the time, it was really competitive. And any player would love it. I tell you now, it was so competitive. The atmosphere, the teamwork, camaraderie.
Good banter on that as well.
Yeah, it's a dressing room.
Dressing room,
just a dressing room. That's what it was. So the transition to football was easy. Uh-huh. But then what you try and do is take the principles that work well in the City, in trading, creating the right environment, take it in the football.
Really? So you took that into the football?
Absolutely, yeah. Same
principles. When did it get to the stage that you missed football too much and you thought, I need to give this a go full time?
I was working around, so wherever I worked, I was in North Carolina, I'm coaching the bank team, I'm coaching the local pizza team, I'm coaching the under-9 girls team, I'm in Chicago coaching the high school team and college team. I was just coaching. I didn't even know a coaching badge existed. It sounds ignorant, but when you're overseas, you don't know. So I came back in and working over here, and someone mentioned level 1, level 2. What's that? I had no idea. So I was working at AIG and moving to RBS, and I started doing level 1 and 2 quickly. Did my level 3, worked under a great coach mentor, a guy called Ted Dale. Obviously worked with him, got my A licence done. So it's now 2004-05, I got my A licence. And my son was a young player, went to Watford Academy. I would go and watch him train, and they asked me to come in and work there with my background and come and work. But I wanted to improve my knowledge first. So I went around Europe for a year. So travelled around, went to just cold called. I cold called loads of clubs, got told to bog off by most of them, and then one in Sport Lisbon invited me over, a guy called Diogo Matos, who's still a really dear friend, top man, was a camera director, went over there, ended up spending weeks over at Lisbon, learning from them. He invited me into PSV, into Ajax, into Barcelona, and that's where, down the line, Next Gen Series came from, where we had 24 of the biggest clubs playing under-19 tournament. Mm. But I had to improve my education some. I didn't know, you can't just go into a club and go, I'm an under-12 coach, under-30. I didn't know enough. So I had to go to Valencia and Sevilla and Barca, Espanyol, all these various clubs, PSG, Anderlecht, and just learn. Villem2A, learn about their school. We got back to Watford and we set the Harefield Academy up where we combined the school, because I'm thinking, why aren't we doing it here? We're doing it over in Villem2A, they're doing it in Ajax, doing it in PSG. Why are we not doing it? Mm-hmm. So you get some great ideas.
So you think that's important to go and actually learn your trade? Because you see, obviously, big names now, they just go straight into management. But you think it's...
I think you've got to learn your trade. Yeah. I really do. I mean, Sean Dyche, I was a camera director at Watford, and Sean Dyche was my youth team coach, Sean. But fair credit to Sean. Sean was always going to go and work with first team. It's in his character, his nature. But he did the toil, you know, with the younger players and the youth team. And we would go and coach in the evenings. Sean would take the 9s, I'd take the 10s and 12s and 13s. And we did all of that. So he really did his education, and it held him in great stead. It's how people learn, mm-hmm. whether they're 9, 19 or 29, it's how people learn. So I think you've got to do your education. I'm not criticising people who haven't done that. They might do it a different way. But for me, I knew coming out of the City with no playing career like a Daishi or a Kenny Miller, or I had to improve my knowledge, mm-hmm. And that's what I did.
See, when you were doing the younger stuff, was the aim always to get to our first team though?
No.
No?
I left because I had no playing reputation. I didn't know what to do. I'm thinking, I'm going to do something in the academy. You get to Watford. I couldn't leave, it sounds arrogant, but I couldn't leave the City where you have a responsible job and you're in charge of people and go in and be a part-time under-13 coach. It was never going to work for me. Mm. So I got Eddie Boothroyd made me camera director. But even then, you've got to be at bigger clubs, Simon. You've got to be at top 6, top 8 Premier League club to have an impact. So I was always striving, thinking I'd be in that environment. Then I got a phone call from Matthew Benham, the owner of Brentford, asked me to come and take the manager. Will I come and manage the first team? Got a phone call at 1 a.m, and literally I was coaching the first team the following day.
Wow.
And then I became a sporting director of Brentford for a couple of years. And then,
so how did Brentford find out about you?
I was trying to get, Matthew was looking to buy a club at the time. Watford were in deep financial trouble. And the owner of this was saying, look, we need financial investment. I was trying to get Matthew Benham to buy Watford. So I brought Matthew in to see AD, and I think Brendan came in, he met with Brendan. Malcolm Mackay was there, Sean Dyche was there, Dick Bate was there.
Some standard of coaching there.
We had a really good group. And I was trying to get Matthew to buy, but Matthew's a Brentford fan through and through. So I tried to get him to do that. So he knew about me, we got to know each other. I have enormous respect for him. And he offered me the job to go and work at Brentford, and I was there for 9 and 5 years.
Wow. First team job, as you said, was assistant to Nicky Forster. Is that right? I played against Nicky Forster, good player, striker.
Good player, really nice fella. Tell Nicky, if I'm his assistant, I need to have a quiet word with him. Because he was, Nicky was the face, still playing, really good player, lovely guy. But he hadn't taken a session in his life before.
Right. So there's what you're talking about, hasn't he really done his...
He was a player still, so no, right, you know, he wouldn't be doing that. But Nicky was media savvy, media friendly, and he was the face, great, so... You know, delighted for him, but I was doing the coaching and suited me as well. I can do a low profile, go about your business. But no, enormous respect for Nicky. I haven't spoken to him recently, actually, but top player.
Really. How good was that going in and coaching first team players? Can you still make first team players better footballers?
Yeah, of course you can. Yeah. Absolutely. But I was 1 o'clock in the morning, I got the phone call at 1:15 on the internet trying to learn the names of the squad. I didn't know who they were.
Really?
Yeah. Gary Alexander and Charlie McDonald, and I'm trying to learn the names. But you turn up there, and players, you know, players want. An organised session, they want to enjoy what they do and they want to come away feeling they've learned something. So make the sessions bright, make them bright, give them a purpose, tell them what you're trying to achieve. So I think we went in there and did that, the boys really enjoyed it. I think we were 18th at the time, I think we finished 10th in the league and it worked out really well for us. But I wanted the job then, and Matthew asked me to go sporting director in charge of the first team in the academy. And in hindsight, it was great. At the time, I was peed off. I wanted that... I wanted a managerial job. Uwe Rosler got the job.
Yeah.
And I was sporting director.
Big angry German. See, just going into that first team for the first time, was there nerves there?
Yeah. Yeah, because you're working with youth team. But AD exposed me to working with some of the first team boys at Watford, which is good. But when you actually take the first session, you can't show any weakness. If you do, I'm not saying players, but they do, they know straight away. Yeah.
Did you ever get any of that?
No.
Because you were so organised with your sessions, and that's what players respect. And
I'd done my homework. I mean, I've done that year away travelling, I'd coach all the age groups, I'd work with various, I've been doing the youth team and reserves in the morning at Watford, for example, then doing the kids in the evening. It was a proper 90-hour week, every single week. Your day off was Sunday afternoon after the academy games, but you put your homework in, and that put me in good stead. I was ready for Brentford and enjoyed it and felt that I could contribute. So I had no nerves, I really enjoyed it and wanted to try things out. How do these boys respond? So passing drill you do with a 14, 15, for example, you could take on. And develop it and be into a phase of play and see how it would work. So they responded well to it.
Mm-hmm. So when Rosler got the job, were you a wee bit disappointed that you never got it at that stage?
Yeah, we met. I told Matthew and we met and Matthew was great and got on well with Uwe. And, you know, people said to me afterwards, what are the attributes of a director of football or a sporting director? What do you need to have? You just need to get on with the manager. He's got to trust you 100%. I said to Uwe, I'll always have your back. You know, we would argue... We would speak 10 times a day. We'd have dinner a couple of times a week. You know, I'd always have a coffee in the morning. I was always there, but little things that I wouldn't do to make him have any sense of distrust. So I would never wear a tracksuit. I was itching to get on the grass, mm-hmm. but I never did. I always wore clothing, you know, casual clothing or suit or whatever. I never put a tracksuit on. And he would say to me, come on, put a tracksuit on. No, that's you. I would never cross the white line because that was his domain.
Yeah.
And I think if you do that, you blur the lines a little bit. So for me, I was really conscientious not to do it. And had a great relationship with Uwe. You know, we'd done well, and he just missed out in the playoffs. And then he went on to, at the time, Wigan were Championship. We were League One at Brentford, and he went on to Wigan.
See, when you're not a sporting director, do you need to bite your tongue a few times as well?
No, you don't. That's
you
your
can say what you think, can you?
You've got to say what you think. If you want a yes man, you've got no
Get
chance.
Get me in,
Well, no, it's right. Yeah, I'm saying, if I sit here and I'm helping you, and all I'm doing is going, no, you're right, Simon, no, you're right, spot on, absolutely right. No one wins by that. So I would always tell him what I think, but do it in a respectful manner. And then if I go forward, take the clock forward to Rangers, I say that any players, if I go to a club now and you think the session is poor, knock on my door and say, Gaffer, that session was crap. What was that all about?
Yeah, you're that opening on.
No problem. You come on my door and say, that session was, then I'll bite your head off. Just how you do it, it's how you speak to people. And again, going back to right at the start, Jock, how you speak to people is important. Mm. So respect is massive for me. And as I say, in terms of Uwe, I'd always give him my opinion. Always. And if he didn't like it, he'd have a flare up for 2 or 3 hours and he'd phone me back and go, I'm sorry. But that's Uwe. Mm-hmm. Really warm hearted, and he's a top fella. Mm-hmm. You know, doing well in Malmo now, and it's one of those, but you've got to be honest with people.
Did you always think or know that when Uwe was gone, the job would be yours?
No.
No?
No, it was Sunday morning. I was due to go to a game. I think Arsenal were playing at the Emirates, and I was ironing a shirt. And the phone went, and it's Matthew. And literally, Uwe had gone on the Thursday, and he said to me, do you want a job? That was it.
No interview, nothing?
No. He said, would you like the job to become manager? I said, yes. He went, good. Okay, then. Come in, we'll talk about your contract. And it was literally done.
Was the butterflies gone?
I was buzzing, no. Buzzing. Put the phone down, I was probably buzzing. So I'm in a pair of shorts, ironing a shirt, you know, giving it a high five, and Richie's thinking I'm obviously smoking something. But it was great. Great, and a real thanks to Matthew, because you need an owner to trust you and give you that chance. Because I had no history in the game. I had no first-team playing career, etc. So for him to do that was a brave call.
Mm-hmm. But a massive plus for you must have been that you'd watched him for a full year from the stands. And did you know exactly what you wanted to change straight away?
I knew exactly what I wanted to change. I knew exactly who I wanted to bring in. I phoned David Weir about 3 minutes after that phone call.
Sorry, what's the connection with David Weir? How do you...
I was doing the Next Gen Series tournament. So from the UK, we had Liverpool, City, Chelsea, Tottenham, Arsenal and Villa. We had Celtic from Scotland, and we had Barca's, Dortmund's, PSG's, everyone else in there. Everton were trying to get in, and David Moyes had asked about getting in and said David Weir would be the coach of that team. So I met with David Weir, and I really liked the way he spoke about the game, and I just find him a gentleman, the way the respect that he has, his knowledge, his intellect, but he speaks his mind as well, and that was key for me. So I had enormous respect. Then he went to Sheffield United, if you remember.
Yeah.
And Brentford played them. And at the time, it was really in infancy for David. But he was trying to play. I liked the way he was trying to play. And we hurt them that day. But his team was really in the infancy. So I phoned David straight away. We put the phone at Matthew. Phoned David. We had lunch on a Monday at King's Cross Station. And I think he started on a Wednesday.
Wow.
And that was it.
Uh-huh. So your promotion that season?
Got promotion. We had a really good run. And, you know, little things happen. The first game, it's 0-0 at home to, I think, Oldham. Yes, you know, it's a really, and the fans are thinking, who's this guy here? And we scored 88th minute, you know, I think it might have been Dougie, I can't remember, or Macca.
Douglas,
and we scored, and we went on a run, and over Christmas we played 6-1-6, and, you know, manager of the month, team of the month, everything else, and it was flying. And we got promotion with Wolves, and we came up, and again, then when we come up, we were everyone's favourites to go down. Smallest budget, one of the smallest budgets in the division, we were favourites, everyone phoned me. Now, everyone said, just survive. AD, just survive. But that was a message to the players. If you say someone just survive, just that's saying just do enough. So Matthew, the owner, put in a really aggressive bonus scheme in place, like a City bonus scheme. Boys loved it and responded, and we just missed out in the Premier League.
Mm-hmm. See the buzz of that 88th minute winner? Bigger buzz than the City?
Different buzz. You know, different. When you're sitting there with, you know, I'm not saying this lightly, you've got $800 million going wrong or going right, or $1 billion and, you know, huge... They were the amounts you're dealing in, huge amounts of money, or 200 million, 300. When you're doing that, there's a proper buzz, let me tell you. You know, when it goes right, when it goes wrong, there's a different type of sensation. but as I say, that's the same as football. Uh-huh. When you take the penalty kick in front of, you know, 40,000 or Hampden out here, you know, when you try to get a consolation goal against Rangers or something, it's that type of feeling, you know.
Come on! That's the last time we're going to talk about that game, all right? But see, that first season, everything was going so well. Was there anything that went maybe a wee bit wrong or surprised you about management in that first year?
Rangers?
Or no, at Brentford.
Brentford. No.
Yeah.
No, I knew the club. All the staff would be brought in. They're still there now, which is something I'm really proud of. You know, like I said, Neil Gregg and Daryl and Bob Attenley, Kitman. Great guys. Top at their trade as well, but they're still there now, doing a fantastic job. So I knew the staff. The players obviously brought in the Foreshores and the Bidwells and the Deans, Tarkowskis. We knew all the guys. And I trusted David and Frank implicitly, and we had great support from the owner and the board, so it was a perfect scenario.
Because I played against Roslo's Brentford team, and for me they were very direct, and then when you took over it was total football. How do you get a team to play like that? Is it confidence? Is it working on the training ground?
You tell me if I'm wrong, but I think you tell a player, people are too short to look at what players can't do, and they don't appreciate what players can do. So they'll say to, we took a guy called Tony Craig, Millwall, hard boy, top boy. And I think he said to me, I've been told to basically get it and hit the channel, edit and kick it. And he was good at editing it and kicking it. Mm-hmm. He was, but he could play. He could play, Tony. He could properly play as a centre-half. And the first 3 or 4 games, it was like a rabbit in the headlights. But then after that, he just grew into it. We took Clint Hill at Rangers. Clint's a top player. Mm-hmm. But he touched the ball more times his first game for Rangers than any other game in his career.
Really, yeah.
So that's why it's there. And he came off and said, I've just touched the ball, I've just passed it 58 times. I was like, but If you tell players they can't do it, they won't do it. Let them have a ball, enjoy it. If they're not good enough, then you have to, in time, move them on. But I think too often, you look at a player, look at Tavernier. I know scouts look at Tavernier and go, he can't defend. He's not good enough 1v1. They forget the fact he's the best attacking fullback with world-class delivery at times.
Just forget it a season.
Yeah, and they look at his weaknesses as opposed to what he can do. And I think that's the thing, make players feel good about themselves. Give the environment. If they can't thrive in the environment, then maybe they're not good enough. But that's to say, that's your job as a manager to mould it and move them on.
What gave you the belief that the passing game was the right way to do it? Because in the Championship, most people boom it, don't they?
They do and they don't. Not now, they
don't. Not now, but back then.
I think
so what
me,
gave you the belief
people
that
say you can't
passing was the right thing?
Because that's how you play the game.
Was it because you went to places like Sporting Lisbon and that?
Yeah, I went to Lisbon, I was at Barcelona, you watched Barca play. And it's just about the quality of players and the drill and the passion for the ball and players dominating the football. Too many players are dominated by the football. You want players who dominate the football and love having a football. You have a work ethic. You've got to enjoy playing. We took people like Alex Pritchard on loan, who's now obviously Tottenham.
Yeah.
Great young player. Played another 45 games the first that season. But we had to drag Alex Pritchard off the training pitch. Drag him. Alan Judge, a shocking injury. But Judgey literally had to drag him off. Friday lunch, and Judgey get off the pitch. But he just wanted to play. And sometimes those players, you got to let them play. The sports scientists are saying, no, he can't do it, his quad to be tight. But Judgey just wanted to play football, and he was magnificent for us. What a player. And as I say, he got really hurt by that 2 years out with an injury. What a talent. Mm-hmm. But you want that passion, enthusiasm.
Just signed for Ipswich, isn't he?
He signed for Ipswich, yeah, but hopefully he's a good player.
Uh-huh. I wanted to ask you about the Moneyball approach at Brentford. What does that involve?
Firstly, Moneyball's here, and what Brentford do is up there, times 10.
Right.
So the owner, Matthew, is such a smart guy. Such a smart guy. And they do
I've probably got him really well.
Yeah, because they get both ends of the spectrum now,
don't
they?
Yeah.
But you look at it and go, Matthew, how he does it, he doesn't look at England or Scotland. He looks at a World League. So he literally, where would Brentford come in, you know, 1 to 500? And that's how he does it in terms of players having impact in their division. So if there's a player in Bundesliga 3 who we can get for €250,000 as opposed to buying a guy from Championship for 5 mil, that's what he does. So he does his homework, looks at the character, the appearance record, does all the due diligence you have to do. Yeah. But he has a team of PhDs in his warehouse. This is a smart operation. Tony Bloom at Brighton's the same. Same thing. They worked closely together, Matthew and Tony, for a while. So again, these are very, very smart guys. And people go, oh, they're Moneyball. It's Moneyball times 10.
Right. Biggest question I wanted to ask you was, did you look at Swindon on that? Was Swindon not on that database now?
It was. It wasn't near the top end, but it was there.
Because you did buy players cheap and you sold them for a lot of money.
Yeah, but we were looking at players. Swindon had Ryan Mason.
Yeah.
Luongo. Uh-huh. You had Luongo. You had John Obike, is that right?
Yeah, Obike was there.
You had Pritchard.
Yeah.
So, you know, I suppose it's my team, but I'm looking at their development. But again, players going to League One, then ready for the Championship. So the loan system or the loan option for Spurs worked really well. Taste them there, do a season, Championship, do a season. Now they're ready for the Premier League. Mm-hmm. And that's been proven. Like with Ryan Mason and Massimo, obviously at QPR now, Alex in the Premier League. So, yeah, some good players.
Yeah. Okay, just the last bit of the Championship. Did you expect to get in the playoffs that year? You said people were telling you could keep up. Did you think you could get that?
I did.
I did. Why? Because of the quality of the players?
Because I thought we just had a real hunger about us. I thought we were underestimated for the first half of the year. People always underestimate teams that come up. They always overestimate teams that come down. Always.
Really, right?
Look at it. Look at the table.
So, did you like being an underdog?
Yeah, loved it. Loved it because people hate coming to Griffin Park. Tiny change room, cold, window open, all the old nonsense you have, but tight ground, really passionate crowd, great crowd, and teams hated it, but they underestimated us. And by the time it was Christmas, it was too late. We were there, and we were hurting them, and we were flowing. And I think us and Bournemouth, out of all the 92 teams, we had the fewest players. So good stuff, keep the players fit. But I'll tell you the team now. You know, you can go through it in Bidwell, Odabayu, Button, Tarkowski, Dean, etc. Dougie, Judgey, Pritchard, Dallas, Jota, Andre. You can go through the team because we only used, I think, 15 players. So that was great. They were fit. They were tight as a unit. And that's why I left, because the owner wanted to bring in, you know, he spoke about more players coming in January. I want to keep that unit really tight.
Really? So you prefer working with a small squad?
It was great, yeah, because they all tasted it. They all tasted it, and of course, the owner, we were lucky with injury, but I don't think we were lucky. I think we had really good staff. I thought our training loading was right, the regime was right, and the boys clicked, and the incentive scheme put in by the owner was magnificent. So the boys are really fighting for it.
Mm-hmm. You know, so is that when it becomes hard as a manager? When you get a bigger squad and there's guys not playing, is it keeping them happy? It's the hard part.
I think you tell me. You're in a squad of players, and comes a Friday afternoon, the coach leaves to drive to the away game, and there's 19 boys on the coach, and you've got six or seven left behind.
I got used to that feeling.
Sometimes you will. But you're looking at players who work hard. You ask them to work hard all week, give everything they've got in training, and by the way, you're not even on the coach, mm-hmm. let alone on the bench. You're not even on the coach. And at that point, you can say, yeah, he's on 20 grand a week or whatever. I think players want to play.
Yeah.
Players want to play. And I'd far rather go leaner than fatter. So for me, 22, 23 players, dip into your academy if you need them, great. But I think other than that, I mean, Celtic have got a really tough injury list at the moment.
So it's and keeping
it, handy over here. Yeah, okay, occasionally you get hurt. But in general, you keep it really tight. And it's like Wolves. I think Wolves have picked the same team.
Squad,
15 out of 16 games.
So see, when the playoffs came, did you know you were going to leave Brentford at the end of that season?
I knew the news broke back in January, February.
What have you done in the playoffs and got up to what we just did?
No, I was still gone.
Really?
I was still gone, yeah, I asked that question. And Matthew was great. Matthew's a nothing to do with enormous respect. I asked the question. And it's his club. He's the owner. He backs it with his money. And it was his prerogative. But had we gone up, I would still have left.
See, if I'd done it your way, do you think you'd still be at Brentford now?
If I'd done it his way?
No, your way.
I wouldn't, that wasn't an option.
No.
No, it wasn't. He's the owner. As I say, I'm not, he's the owner. Mm. He wants to do it this way. This is his approach. And had I taken those six, seven players in January, then I think I would still be there now, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so obviously when you left Brentford, there must have been loads of opportunities for you.
Yeah, I was lucky. I was really lucky, Sanderson. People say it casually, it's not, because there's a lot of good people out of work. So I was really fortunate, David and I were thanking that, and we were offered lots of jobs.
No, I say no.
And Rangers is Rangers. You know, David, we sold it. Mm-hmm. But as a young kid growing up, Rangers are a European institution. And for me, the chance to go and manage Rangers was...
When did you first hear a Rangers interest?
I got a phone call. I'd seen about five or six championship clubs. Got to the point of talking terms with one or two of them, and then we met with Rangers in London, and came to see us, and we had a follow-up meeting with them, and I knew then. In my mind, I'm thinking, I want to manage in the Premier League.
Premier League.
I want to manage in the English Premier League. Haven't got a playing career. I've been at a small club like Brentford. I'm saying small in the right way. Small club like Brentford. No Premier League team's going to take me. They won't take me as it currently stands. If I can go to Rangers, get them promoted, get into Europe within 2-3 years, and do really well with Rangers, I either stay at a fantastic club in Rangers or I get poached to go to Premier League. And that's the only way I was going to do it. And that's not either stay at Rangers or that's not a bad choice.
Yeah.
If you've got the choice of Rangers or Premier League, you're a very lucky man.
So no hesitation with it, but in the first division?
No.
No.
Because the challenge was non-negotiable, to use a term used by the board, non-negotiable promotion. So I don't mind that. You know, I'd rather black and white as opposed to, well, let's see how we are come May. Mm-hmm. I'd rather black and white, and it was black and white. Get promotion, and we did.
How was it feeling when you got announced, confirmed as a Rangers manager for such a massive club, obviously? Yeah,
you don't realise, I'm saying to people this morning, you're in it, you're in this goldfish bowl. You come out of it, it doesn't mean anything. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that, please don't, you know, it's not derogatory to Rangers Celtic in any way, but you come out of it. We were at Forest, we were playing a game, we had a 3 o'clock, I think, the 12:30 kick-off, the boys having a pre-match meal, I had the pre-match there, they're watching TV screens, and one of the boys said, if you take over, there's an Old Firm game on. No. I'm in my office watching Old Firm, glued to the Old Firm. Didn't even know. And I give them dog's abuse for not knowing it's an Old Firm game. But it doesn't mean anything.
No.
Because you're in this goldfish bowl. I got to Glasgow Central yesterday for the first time for a while. Get in the cab and the guy goes, Mr. Warburton, how are you?
It's nuts up here, isn't it?
It's nuts.
Uh-huh.
It's nuts.
It is.
You know, Jose Mourinho could climb into a club in London, or the top managers could climb in, and unrecognised. Uh-huh. Yeah, up here, it's a different world.
What did you think the first time you seen Ibrox?
Yeah, I loved it. Loved it. It just smells of football. Just smell the wood, the tradition, loved it. I mean, everyone's going to say that. If you don't say that, then you shouldn't be in football. Mm-hmm. What a place that is.
Mm-hmm. What was your view on the squad you inherited, sorry?
We had 9 players. If you remember, is it 11 or 13 left? I think it was 11.
Right.
Players had gone. Ahead. They all left, and we had 9 players in that first session.
Is that not a bit scary?
That's a blank canvas. Right. A blank canvas. So, you know, again, people said, oh, European players were... I had to get players in that I could whack on, you know. Tavernier, you know, Rotherham, Fodringham, Swindon, Danny Wilson, again, Liverpool, knew him, Don Ball on loan, Gedeon on his own, these are young kids. Mm-hmm. But those type of players, Rob Keenan coming in, they were tasked. Those young boys are coming out playing in front of 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, playing in front of 50,000 at Ibrox with the expectation that you've got to go up. Mm-hmm. So it sounds great to a player, but you know yourself, if that's your first move, wow.
Did you need to explain that to the boys when you signed them?
Yeah, and their character and ask them. But people like Tav and Rob Keenan, they were just enthused by it. Waggy.
See, when you're signing players for Rangers, sorry, do you need to look into their personality? Do you need to ask people?
Yeah, you need to talk to them. You've got to talk to them. When I hear people say, I looked at my Wisecat for half an hour, it looks all right, put a bid in. Unbelievable. You've got to sit and talk to a player. What makes him tick? Where's his passion? Where does he see himself in the team? Where do you explain? He should ask you, Gaffer, where do you see me in your team? I'm amazed when players don't ask that. Where do you want to play me? How do you see my role? What are my strengths? How are they going to impact your team? They don't. Some guys go, yeah, where do I sign? You need more than that. You need a bit more than that.
I asked a few managers and that, and it was the same answer, the bench. But was it a good opportunity for you to, because these boys were so young, it was just start, was it right back to basics with the team?
Yeah, we literally said, we're going to play. Huge credit to the likes of Kenny Miller and Lee Wallace, those type of people.
Yeah, who were already at the club.
Yeah, they were here and top professional. Can't speak high enough of those two guys. But those guys had a really important mentoring role. Then they're young. Don Ball, don't forget, came in. Don was a young kid on loan. You know, Gedeon was 17, 18. Emerson Hyman, these type of boys are just young kids coming in, but they thrived, showed their quality and you know, did all right. But people like Josh Windass, Matty Crooks, they take time. And because it's Rangers and the media, why isn't Crooks playing? He's 19, come out of, you know. But they're young kids and they just need time to develop.
So how long into that season did you think, I've got something special with these kids here?
It wasn't something special. It was, we have to go up. Mm-hmm. We have to go up.
Did you drum that into them?
Yeah, there was no, this is a challenge. There's no second and fight or playoffs. We've got to win the league. We've got, and they won it by 11 points, I think it was. I mean, injuries and squad, but they did the job, and all credit to them. They did the job, you know. Young kids coming together, playing in front of 50,000 at Ibrox with the expectation of a club like Rangers, and they got the job done. They beat a smaller team at the Petrofac, as you mentioned earlier, and they beat Celtic in that game. It hurts that you lost to Hibs, but we were running empty. We only had five subs that day. We had no one left.
Mm-hmm. You're saying about the pressure of playing in front of Ibrox of players, is it the same as a manager who's came from Brentford, 7,000 every week to 50,000?
Yeah, we had, you know, Brentford was rocking. At the end, it was a sellout every game, great support, but it's a smaller club. You know, you come to Ibrox, but you've got to enjoy it. You've got to enjoy it.
Can you enjoy it then?
You have to, Simon. If you're not enjoying it, why are you in football? Mm-hmm. Of course, you have the nerves and the frustrations and the pain of a defeat or whatever, the joy of a victory, but if overall you can't enjoy it, being at a club like Rangers or Celtic or playing the Old Firm, I'm privileged to have had four or five Old Firm games. Magnificent. Magnificent. Never, ever forget those games.
Mm-hmm. Was the rivalry with Hibs, did that help you push on in the league as well?
Yeah, again, I'm an outsider coming in. That's news to me. Mm-hmm. You know, but people like Kenny and Lee would pull me aside and say, Gaffer, this is, you know, Aberdeen away. Oof, this is a big one. But you don't know it till the second year. But again, you've got to try and learn about the game quickly. So, okay, Hibs, I can understand it. But I think we beat them 6-2 in the cup, mm-hmm. right at the start of that first season. And the fans were fantastic. And we went one down. And I think Waggy and Tav scored. And suddenly we're 2-1 up. And then we battered them. And the fans just took off. And from that moment there, they were behind us. Mm-hmm. But that gave all of the new guys a taste. This is it now. Mm-hmm. Every away game, you just fill every end or you fill half the stadium. So for the boys, getting used to that, they loved it. You watch the likes of Tav, and Tav doing what he's doing now, all credit to him.
Because he's flying captain as well, must make you quite proud.
Yeah, but
as well.
He should be. What a great place to be in.
Think he could play at the top level, Tav?
Yeah, and go earlier. What he can do, what he can't do. Will he be found out at Premier League level? Maybe. But then again, he might be outstanding. Mm-hmm. You know, so again, playing with, again, right way, better players. Players on 50, 60, 80, 100 grand a week. Will that make Tav a better player? Will that help him? You know, and improve certain areas of weakness, but his attacking strengths, his delivery is world class.
Just to pick up on something you said there, you spoke to Kenny and Lee Miller, Kenny Miller and Lee Wallace. Would you lean on the older players? Would you invite them into a chat with you?
Yeah, of course you should. They're older players. They're senior guys at what they do. Mm-hmm. So why not chat to them? You know, we have analysis every day, 10, 15 minutes, and you want contribution. And I want the young players to look at what Kenny's saying. He'll speak his mind. Lee Wallace will speak his mind. But the beauty of those two guys is they do it respectfully. They're not effing and blinding and telling you to do one. They're going through it. Nico Crenshaw, football student. Nico, if you say something wrong, Nico digs you out.
Does he, right?
Oh, yeah, Nico dig you out. No.
What, can you give us an example?
Yeah, if you said about You're playing a 4-3-3 and you want to play with a 1 and a 2 and you want the 1 to vacate the space and the 8 to drop in and you work on the pattern. He would go, yes, but if I'm playing against you, I do this. What now?
Is he, huh?
Because for Croatia, he's playing with Modric and whoever else. 80-year cap for Croatia, don't forget. So he says, I watch Rangers, I will do this. And looks at you. Okay, now we need 2. Now we'll play the 2 and the 1. 2 vacate, 10 drops and... So, but it makes it challenges you.
Was that the first time as a manager you were really challenged? I mean, you got the bigger players in.
Yeah, you have to sit there and you're sitting there privately. You say, shut them up. You know, but professionally, you're saying you need it. You've got to be pushing. I think about the City, you're constantly being challenged. Constantly being challenged. I walked into I'm digressing, but I'm not. I walked into a bigger bank. I made the move up. I was comfortable, a big fish in a little pond, and I moved to a big bank. And I walked in and I literally sat down, and probably the biggest amount of money I traded in was like $50 million or, you know, in terms of one hit. And I walked in and I literally took my jacket off and Mike said, take a seat. And I got a dolly in, 200 million for so-and-so. I went, yeah, made it, bank dealt, wow. But I look back now and he goes, they set that up. They asked the customer to do it, to hit me, just to see how I reacted. Mm-hmm. But you're straight in and like, geez, you know. But that was, for me, great. Wow, this is a different world. Now I've arrived. I thought it was a really big balls, but it was that test. And you need that test.
And again, that helped you, being the Rangers manager as well, because you'd experienced stuff like that.
You've got to. And you need Nikos, and you need Kennys, and the young players like Barry Mackay and Holtie and Halliday should look at those guys. Halliday's great. I'm delighted to see him doing so well, but Andy's Rangers through and through. But he would look at it, and he's got something about him, and he'd ask a question, and you might slap him down and like laugh and joke, but he was better for it. You're better for it as a manager, so love all that too.
So do you prefer that in players, people who will question you and ask you questions?
Yeah, in the right way.
Yeah, respectfully.
Do it respectfully and always, yeah. Because if you can't answer them, don't be doing it. If you put a session on and you can't answer a question, don't be doing that session.
You can't explain why you're doing it.
Yeah. But too many coaches, I think, look on YouTube and get a session and A to B, B to C, X1 passes to Y1. Okay, fine. Go on in. And then someone questions it. Well, that was on YouTube. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, learn your trade.
Yeah. Right, I want to ask you about the Scottish Cup. Post Christmas, good form you were in. Did you fancy your chances when you were Celtic?
I'll be careful I say this. I was so dismayed at the way Ronnie Dyler was being treated.
Right.
That was new to me. And he was getting dogs abuse from the papers. And I thought it was almost bordering on legal. That's how I saw it. Some of the headlines on Ronnie Dyler, if you remember, he was getting levels of abuse in the media, which I just thought were way beyond appropriate. Mm. So I felt for him. And I knew that the turmoil would be going on within the camp and they had a couple of dodgy results, but they were still the best team in Scotland. But it was just a case of us being our best on the day, catching them slightly below their best, and one or two events going our way. Patrick Roberts missing from 3 yards out, open goal.
See, when you see that happening to Ronnie Dyla, was there a wee thought in the back of your memory that this could come for me?
No, I knew it. I was told, my first day here, I got told by someone very wise, went, it's good cop, bad cop in Scotland. You can't have two good cops, two bad cops. You've got to have a good cop, bad cop. So right now, Ronnie Dyler's bad cop. He said, you could basically go and do 4-0 and they give you a positive spin because you're the good cop at the moment. But the moment Brendan arrived, you know straight away that, hang on a second, and you knew. And then obviously, you know, I've seen this year, Brendan's won 2 trebles. And I've seen some derogatory comments about Celtic's performance and Brendan getting slagged off. How can that possibly be? But right now, Stephen's a good cop. And then you see what, and that's how the Scottish media
is. Is that the hardest thing about managing up here, Celtic and Rangers media?
Yeah, it is. Because whatever you do, they can spin it. They can. I was asked one press conference, never forget, there was nothing in the news. There's no injury. We were playing some on the weekend. There was nothing big coming up. And they said to me, do you think Celtic and Rangers would join the leagues down south? Well, where'd that come from? First question. So I said, look, I don't know. Will it happen 5, 10, 20 years? Probably, yeah, in 5, 10, 20 years' time, but right now, let's move on. That was it. The headlines the following day. Warburton demands from Doncaster that Rangers move south. Warburton, you know, mortified that Rangers still in Scotland. I didn't say any of that.
No.
But how do you go back at them? You can't. If you go back, they make you look like a petty... Warburton doesn't like criticism.
Can't win.
You can't win.
Uh-huh. So you should have just done interviews with us, mate.
Yeah. You were on a bench at the time.
But see, when the draw came out and you got Celtic, were you quietly confident you could beat them?
I went into the game thinking the players... I looked at, like, Dom Ball. I know Dom from a young boy at Watford. I signed him, like, 10, 11.
Oh, did you, right?
So I'd Dom for the academy.
He was a sitter for you, wasn't he?
He sat, yeah. He could play centre-half, but he sat for us that day. But I looked at Dom thinking, how's he going to react to the build-up to the game? Couldn't wait. I looked at Tav and Rob Keenan, couldn't wait. I'm thinking, Liam Wallace and Kenny I know about. Wes Fodrium, couldn't wait for the game. They're buzzing. Andy Halliday was like, you know, 15 Red Bulls every day. Yeah, because he couldn't wait. I'm thinking, man, they're up for this. They're properly up for it. Holtie, a cup of tea, Holtie. How are you feeling? Oh, I can't wait, Gaffer. So you look at it and go, there's no nerves. There's no, if you remember the penalties, Geddy and Zalalem at 17, 18 years of age, stepped up, puts it in the corner and gives it one of these to the Celtic fans. Mm-hmm. He's just turned 18. Yeah, got some balls.
So see, can you tell by your players how they're acting before a game whether it's going to be a good game?
You know yourself. You look around the change room and go, they fancy
this.
Yeah, they want it.
And you could tell.
And if we lose, we're going to lose to a really good team or a really good goal or a really good display. So, but Celtic should have won. Look at the squad on paper. You look at the wages. You know 9 times out of 10, they'll win that game of football. Not being to watch the Rangers or myself. That's 9 times out of 10. But on that day, we played really well. They were probably slightly below the best, and it was a classic game.
Another thing I wanted to ask you is, because you said Celtic were the best team in the league in Scotland at that time, was there no wee temptation to switch your style of play, or was it always stick to your principle?
Because you can't say to a player, this is how we're going to work. And again, the Scottish media, no plan B. Of course there's plan B. 4-3-3 is 4-1-4-1, 4-2-3-1, wide men coming now, full-backs high, two and whatever it is, it's basically 4-3-3, in my opinion. So you look at it and go, well, we will adjust. We may go 2-1 in midfield. We may narrow up and come in really tight. The two wide men coming in narrow and make sure that Tav and Lee Wallace. But I knew Tav and Lee Wallace would go. Lee would go, and we worked so hard on the full-back dropping in. And so Andy Halliday would drop in. Lee would go. Bam Mackay would come in and receive it as an 8 or a 10. So that type of movement, we hurt them. We really hurt them. And they tried to press us, if you remember. They pressed us with 2. They pressed us with 3. And second half pressed us with 4. And we just clipped it out to Tav. So Wes Fodrium, you know, second half, pips it straight out of the Tav and halfway line, and we're out. Mm-hmm. And I can see Wonnie going, oh. But they weren't quite pressing together, because they didn't have to all season. We were Championship, and we were getting out, and the boys were enjoying it.
Were you surprised how much better in Celtic? You were that day?
I thought we played really well that day. But don't forget, Patrick Roberts, who's a top player, by the way, mm-hmm. missed from 3 yards out.
But were you frustrated that it went to penalties? You never won it in normal time?
No.
No.
Just want to win it. Uh-huh. I bit my nails a bit in the penalty shootout but even then the quality of the penalties, you know, the only one to miss was Tav. I think Tav missed, and immediately who's the boy playing now, Celtic boy, he missed. You think he hit the bar, didn't he?
Who's that? Rodjick?
No, it wasn't Rodjick. That was right Rodjick, at the end.
Right, then Rodjick,
but
missed.
It was Tav that missed it.
Right.
And then they missed straight after, hit the bar, and you think an inch, and they win it. You know, but we were right there. And it was some of the penalties were just Nicky Law stepped up, and you know, it was tremendous.
Would that have been the most nervous you'd been in your managerial career?
Yeah, because I knew what it meant to the fans. And it sounds a bit, you know, prophetic, but I knew what it meant. It meant so much to the fans, it meant so much to the players and the staff after where the club had been. So to get promotion, great, but to go and beat Celtic in that type of game, well, magnificent.
And seeing the dressing room after it, do you jump up? Is it jumping up and down?
Yeah, it was a proper. But don't forget, the boys were early exhausted. Mm-hmm. You know, extra time and pens, they were out on their feet, but they could hear the singing and just what it meant to Glasgow. And just coming into the stadium on that day, coming in, driving in the morning and experience that from a mile out. They're sitting 3, 4, 5 deep on both sides on a Sunday morning. It's incredible. Mm-hmm. And you won't see that in any other club.
No. Unbelievable. Final, what do you think went wrong?
Honestly, we were spent force in terms of Dom Ball suspended was a killer because we had no defensive midfielder. We asked Andy to play out of position. So that was a real, that hurt us. It sounds a bit naive to say a young low knee, but Dom was an important member. We only named 5 subs because the likes of Tom Walsh and Ryan Hardy and Jordan Thompson had been out on loan. We couldn't play them.
Right.
So we had no subs. We were running empty. Literally run empty with injuries and 16 fit players, and to come so close, to go 2-1 and to get that to that point, and was it 8 minutes away from winning the cup? But you knew, had we gone further on, there's nothing in the legs. Mm. And then 2 late set pieces, poor defending, and that hit us, and that really hurt us to lose that game, because it's a game we should have won, but as I say, really hurt us. But just you want to win the cup, whichever country you're in, you want to win the main cup. And there's no doubt that's the main cup.
So were you worried beforehand due to injuries? Were you worried going into the game?
Yeah.
Did you still back the players? Did you still think you could?
If you remember, the press said, "Oh, Warburton's making a statement to the board that he hasn't got enough players." I wasn't making any statement. We had no players left, none at all, because the likes of Tom Walsh, the likes of Ryan Hardy, you would have put on the bench, great experience, and brought them off the bench. They couldn't. They'd come back from loans and couldn't play. So you're sitting there and you literally couldn't feel it. And I knew losing Dom was a real body blow. And to lose a 19-year-old and say, well, Scottish Cup final. But it was just bodies in important positions. And he was so good in the semi-final. And he had physicality. He's 6'1", 6'2". So defensively, another physicality. You know, and we had Barry Mackay. We had Holtie. You know, these are smaller players. And you play a team like Celtic. And, you know, Hibs. But obviously Celtic and Hibs, yeah. Those teams, they got physicality.
So did set pieces a worry for you as well?
No, when you have people like Clint Hill and Danny and, you know, Kenny Miller's good aerially.
Yeah.
But you need to have that physicality. You play teams with 5-6 big men. Mm-hmm. And they know they can hurt you. We played teams in the league and they knew they'd put 10 men behind the ball, defend for 90 minutes, but they would get a corner or they would get a free kick and that was it. And how many times you concede from a set piece and spend 89 minutes trying to get the goals back. So it's a tough one, but we should have defended that goal better. We didn't, as a group of players and staff, we didn't defend that goal better and we got punished in the last 5 minutes.
See, when the boys get beat so late on, do you go mad after the game, or is it just silence?
What's the point of that? Uh-huh. Nothing's achieved by that. Uh-huh. Emotions run high. But you've got to talk it through. You've got to talk it through at the right time. But they're devastated. The staff are devastated. We lost a cup final with Rangers, a game we should have won. And we wanted to win the cup. And so the Celtic game for me became insignificant then. Now you can look back and go, it was a great game. But at the time, what's the point of beating Celtic if you're going to lose the final? Mm-hmm. You want to win the cup.
Is there anything you would do differently now, looking back?
Looking back, player-wise, not put players out on loan, possibly have the extra bodies. It was just the fact, if you remember, there's a 2-week gap between the last game of the season and the cup final. Yeah. And that's the killer. We had to try and find a team to play. I took the boys down to Tottenham and we played Tottenham's under 23s at the training ground. And we had to try and find a game. It's too long. It's too long. You want a last game of the season on this Saturday and play the cup final the following Saturday. That's what you want. Uh-huh. But it's scheduling.
Despite the final disappointment, are you feeling confident going into the Premiership season?
Yeah. We were confident of a good squad. I was confident we would come second. And again, how do you say that? Because mm-hmm. It looks like a lack of ambition or being negative. Not at all. But I knew Celtic were by far the best squad. Absolutely by far the best squad. Mm-hmm. And yet, you know, still that first day, you see that game for 55 and like the blue touch paper and oh my God.
Does your heart sink when you see
that?
Yeah,
did sink because not a negative one. I wanted to say Rangers are back. Uh-huh. You know, Blue Noses are back, or whatever you want to put up there, because the spectacle was magnificent, the stadium's outstanding. I didn't want going 55. I didn't know it was going there. But why would you want that? Mm-hmm. Because the fans immediately came in and just lit that blue touch paper, and here we go, we're gonna smash it. Come on. Celtic have got a squad packed of international players, and we've got young kids and free transfers. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you've got to be realistic and say, I wanted a bill for year three. Then in year three, have a go. This year, I've just been asked, do I think Rangers win it this year? I hope they do. I don't think they've got enough this year to win it. I think Celtic will win it this year. Right. Next year's a year for Rangers for me. And that's how, you just give Stephen time, settle in players, make one or two changes. But I don't think they've got a Rogic type. I don't think they've got that real world
number 10,
who's so clever and makes the teams tick. And you look at the best teams, they've always got that clever player.
Mm-hmm. See, in the summer after the final, was it? Could you enjoy your break, or is it just get ready for the next season? What was it, looking for new players?
Looking for new players, but we lost the cup final. You want to finish the season on a good note. We've lost the cup final, uh-huh. You know, so I was a miserable sod. Rather the misses for the...
Are you like that, are you?
No, I'm not. I don't mean to be. I wouldn't be in public, you know, but then in public, you didn't really bother him. Of course you did, but you're in public. But with the misses and that, I was a miserable sod, yeah, because... You just lost the cup final, you want to finish the season, you got promotion, win the cup final, win the Petrofac, you've had a great season and you're flying. Nah.
No, okay. You, as I said, when we played just at Peterhead, I couldn't believe how high intensity and the speed of play. So I was a wee bit surprised when you brought in older players.
Because, I actually got asked a question downstairs, I probably didn't answer it the right way. In hindsight, I was told about the Premier League, I was told about the physicality, what you would need. And I should have trusted my gut more. So I went with more senior players and enormous respect for like Clint Hill, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, what a
man. He's another warrior, isn't he?
Warrior. Nico Cranchard, the best technician in Scotland. You know, people don't know how good he was. Kenny Miller, how good
he
was.
We played just in the League Cup that year as well, and Cranchard played and he was outstanding.
You just can't get near him. Uh-huh. But he's had 88 caps for Croatia. He's a world-class player. But I should have trusted my gut and gone more for the Pritchards. Not that I could get Alex, but that type of player. Young, hungry, tactically gifted. But I thought about the physicality and still the money. You know, people say, why don't you get the 6'3" guy that can play? Because a 6'3" guy that can play is on 50 grand a week. Mm-hmm. I can't get those players. You either get the physicality or you get the technician. You can't get both for the budget that we had available. So we weren't spending a lot. We spent all of our money on Joe Garner, who was that physical specimen, and the fans loved him and a top lad. But we didn't spend enough money. And if you want to go and compete with Celtic, you've got to go and spend more money. And I'm delighted for Stephen that they are. They're finally spending money. And that's how Rangers will close the gap. Mm-hmm. So Stephen's doing a tremendous job and he needs that investment.
Were you also hoping that the older boys would be a good influence on, because you had so many young players?
Yeah, I wanted that mentor type role. Yeah. I had Lee, I had Kenny, but I wanted more. I wanted some more men to go into the Parkhead type arenas. But again, that first game in September was, you know, you look at it, Sendor's got sent off, you know, Clint wasn't fit. It was just what happened. Yeah. But I just, in hindsight, I wouldn't have got so many senior. I would have got trusted my gut and gone younger.
Was Joey Barton a good influence on the players?
Joey Barton's played at the highest level, intellect of the game, he's articulate. Championship team of the year before with Burnley got promoted, and I wanted him to come in and be that type of mentoring influence. This is the standard, train with me. Mm-hmm. So, as I say, what happened, but wish him well at Fleetwood. But as I said, it didn't work out for us.
Uh-huh. So what was the problem that you couldn't repeat the success of the year before?
Well, what was the success of the year before? Promotion. Were we going to beat Celtic in that league? Not in NATO. No, we weren't. They were by far the strongest squad. So we weren't going to win the league. I thought we would have come second. Mm-hmm. When we left the club, we were second. So we were second, we were in a cup semi-final, and what happened. It wasn't of my making, or David's making, that's for sure. But we were second in the league, and I think we would have finished second. I was comfortable we would have finished second. And we'd have used January transfer window, and I had no qualms about that. The problem was Celtic were having their stellar year. Mm-hmm. That was a problem. People forget that. Look at the table now. Celtic have lost 4. Is that right?
Yeah.
They'd played 26, won 24, drawn 2. They'd only dropped 4 points in 26 games. So they were 20 points ahead. And every press conference, you're 18 points behind, you're 19 points behind, you're 20 points behind. Thanks. But you realise that people don't look at what's happened to Rangers. They just look at the gap. Because it touches the intensity of the rivalry between Rangers and Celtic. Mm. You didn't say Mackay's doing well, or Holtie's settling in, or so-and-so. They didn't look at that. They just went, the gap's 20 points. And that's where it goes so wrong. Because I said at the time, they've all regressed to the mean. Not derogatory to Celtic. Celtic will come back to a normal season. You know a striker. 10, 10, 11, 10, 25, 10, 10. He has that 1 year. The golfer that can't be beat for 1 year, then goes back to the normal, back to the pack. So that was that, Celtic's year. They've never repeated it since.
Did it make it harder that Brendan Rodgers got the job as well?
I know Brendan. I worked with him at Watford. He got the job, but they had a stellar year. Good luck to, you know, all credit to Brendan. Outstanding manager, you know, great guy. But they had that stellar year. It's not been repeated since.
Yeah. Do you think you maybe just got Rangers at the wrong time? If you'd got them in, maybe when they were spending a bit more money, you could have challenged it.
Frustration is you leave. You know, you have to leave. Yeah. And I watched Pedro get money to spend on players. And that was a huge frustration, thinking, well, why couldn't we have that money? But the gap was 20 points. I don't know how it finished at the end of the season. Was it 20, whatever it was?
Were you asking for money?
Any manager will keep asking. A manager's job is to ask. The moment a manager stops asking for things, and you know he's lost the drive and the passion, you've got to keep asking for things. So we wanted certain, you know, we wanted to get more, but we still had a squad of players on 3s, 4s and 5s, which in Scotland, they'll say that's big money, not compared to Celtic. Uh-huh.
How frustrating is that when you've got a guy like Matthew who's desperate to get you new players, and then you go into another club and you can't get players?
And that's at the moment, the North-South divide. We had a conversation before, but you could talk for hours. But you look at the money down south now, you look at the Championship now, what they're spending on players, what they're giving players in terms of weekly wage, and you compare it to here. The gap is getting wider and wider and wider.
Just finally, how disappointed were you in the unusual manner of your departure?
Yeah, disappointed. You know, obviously, not going to expand too much on that, but from my point of view, I can honestly tell you, you would never walk away from a club like Rangers, ever.
Yeah.
No contact with any club. At the time, I found out via Sky Sports News. So that was it. But when I still get the derogatory tweets coming through, you snake this and you snake that. No, sorry, boys, you got it completely wrong. We would never walk away from Rangers.
Yeah. Do you think you deserve more time then?
Yeah, absolutely. We come. Do you
get to fight your case now? Or is it
You're gone. You're gone, aren't you? But we were second at the table, and we got promotion the year before, and the cup final at Minor Petrofac. So, if it's a score report, we're doing all right. That's not a C minus. We're doing all right. But the gap to Celtic was that dominated every single meeting, every single telephone conversation. And you've got to look at it and go, Celtic, we're having that stellar year. Now, this year, we'd probably be 3 points behind them, 4 points behind them. So that's the hard part, Simon.
Just looking back, now you've been away for a bit, is there any other environment like Glasgow?
Nothing like it. Nothing like it.
Does it put you through the ringer or
No, it's great. Loved it. I'd walk back to Glasgow.
Would you come back?
Yeah, absolutely. Walk back to Glasgow. And any manager says differently, he's talking at the back of his, you know, whatever. Uh-huh. The fact of the matter is, it's institution. Both clubs' institutions, global brands. So who would not walk back to Rangers? Loved it. Loved every minute of it. Learned loads from it.
Made you a better manager.
Yeah, maybe a better person. More importantly, maybe a better person dealing with it, understanding how the media works, the politics involved with a bigger club. You come away with it and go, I get that. And it's amazing how Rangers is perceived down south by the football people. You know, they all come and talk to me and, how is it at Rangers? How is it at Rangers? To manage Rangers, the old firm. Because football people want to be involved in those games. So I'm very fortunate to be involved in four or five of those games. But to manage a club like Rangers, yeah, I'd walk back to Glasgow.
Brilliant. Getting back into it now, sorry.
Yeah. Not precious about whether you're manager, coach, sporting director, tech director. I'm not precious. I think, in a non-arrogant way, I'm comfortable doing those jobs. Just want to find the right opportunity where you have a chance. Overseas, yes, I'd look overseas. I'm talking to a couple of people overseas. Yeah, just find the right opportunity. But I'm 55. I can't afford to go and make a rash decision and get it wrong. I've got to choose wisely. So I've turned down two or three because it wasn't right. Choose your owner very, very wisely.
I'm sure you will. Been a pleasure. Thanks very much.